like the Glenn Miller Cross guy supposed to watch football? You know? I mean, how is somebody supposed to, if you're a hardcore racist, white supremacist type, how are you supposed to watch Major League Sports? Major League Sports are completely integrated to the point where it's
kind of like you would watch horse racing. Doesn't mean you want to be a horse or hang out with them. It just means you want to bet on them. You want to bet on which big black guy can knock the other big black guy out.
People get emotionally invested in their sports teams.
Sure they do. So it has helped integrate the society in that
I'm just
respect,
saying
yes.
That especially with the NBA, because basketball tends to be a sport that is very much so a part of black America. You know? I mean, more so than any other American sport. There's three American sports, right? Football, baseball, basketball. All of them are fully integrated, right? All of them have their people from all walks of life, all nationalities that play in these sports. You know, baseball is probably the most integrated of them. But even in basketball, you have people from Europe and you have people from, you know, Russia that play professional sports in America.
Right, and you also have people who play with them, right? Like white people who play with them. And I went through this a couple of years ago.
And they let white people play basketball still?
White people play with black people and live in rooms with them and are best friends and all of that stuff with them. And I talked about this, like, man, might be 8 years ago, right, when I was working at the electronic McDonald's and I was like, man, I can't believe what happened, right? Because, like, this white dude just, like, went off into this space. He was talking about an individual, right? But he like clearly called her, you know, the N-word, right? And it was like he wasn't talking to me because he just kind of went off to, you know how you do that memory thing? And you just go like, oh, that bastard, right? Like I might do about John Elway. You just mention his name and I'm in a different place. And this guy like called this woman this name and I was like, wow. And I just kind of walked off like, in a shock that he went there, and I brought it up on the radio all those years ago because I have never, to this day, been in a room with all white people with no black people present. I'm always there. You know what I mean? So I don't know what the conversation is when there are no black people around in all instances.
Have you ever seen that Saturday Night Live skit where Eddie Murphy dresses up as a white guy?
Right, right, right. Comes from Richard Wright's White Like Me, or Black Like Me, but... But the thing of it is that I got a lot of calls from white people saying that, oh yeah, people say stuff when there's no black people around.
Well, I mean, come on.
And
it's about 3 minutes after the hour of two right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. No doubt.
But you give those people.
But damn it, man. See, this is the problem. The idea.
You asked what I thought about it.
Did I? Did I?
You brought up this. The
Clippers damn right I did. But this is the problem. It's hypocrisy. So the billionaire white guy says comments, and that's bad. But, I mean, so we're saying that all these guys in the NBA who have been outraged, all these basketball players that have been upset and disgusted by this have never made disparaging comments, and there's no hypocrisy here. There's no...
Sure, there's hypocrisy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's my whole point. Is that...
Because they said what? That they don't like white people? Or
I didn't... I'm just saying...
What disparaging... I mean, because you're saying...
Mike,
they,
I'm trying to complete the thought here.
Okay, go ahead.
You can't start... this idea that people go, I don't want you hanging out with this person because they look like this, because their skin color's like this. I mean, like, this is something because... There's a certain nature that people have about people that look like them, people that act like them,
right.
People that are part of their culture. They
right.
feel more comfortable with people who are more similar to them, come from the same communities, come
right.
from the
whether
same culture.
Right, whether it's Brookside
whatever.
And Waldo, like we were talking about earlier, or,
exactly, or whatever
Cross Truce.
So people are just like, why are you hanging out with that person?
Right.
You make me look stupid when you hang out with that person. And if that's a racial thing for whatever reason, or if it's a cultural thing for whatever reason, I mean, this thing happens all the time. This bigotry, this idea of bigotry and prejudice, it still exists. I mean, we are living in a post-racial society, no doubt, because we're integrated. But people still, because we're human beings, tend to flock to people that are like them more so than people that are unlike them. It makes people feel comfortable to be around people that are similar to them. You know, and this idea, I mean, so it's a little unnerving to see all this anger being, you know, pointed at this guy, because then it becomes just anger at the situation. And what is the situation? So are we mad about the way things were 30 years ago, or are we frustrated about the way things are now?
My whole point is this. as the old hip hop philosopher said, don't hate the player, hate the game, right?
Speaking of which, we get somebody on the phone. We should probably talk to them.
That's cool. I don't hate this Donald whatever his name, Sterling dude. I'm just telling you, the game is still racist. This country is still racist. We are not over it until we address the very things that lead to why is there a murder problem here and not here when you can identify many of the same deals.
Because there's economic opportunity over here and there's not over here. That's
okay.
Why.
So
that's
then
what we're talking
that,
about.
Right. But why is there not economic activity here versus here? Or opportunity here versus here. You know what I mean? We're not in a post-racial society. I mean, there are still some things that need to be addressed because there are.
But that economic opportunity, you know, is not based upon race. It was at a point in this country. I mean, how is it that little brown people come from Mexico all day long and find opportunity all over the place in this country?
Because we had a systematic.
I understand. There's a lot of things that happened.
We took in this country and made a situation, and then to just like lift the blinders and say, "All right, move forward, be free." That's a hard call.
I get
it. You know, it's a hard call for a guy like me who grew up on 39th and Prospect, and I ain't no example for nobody's life. Please don't take it that way. But it's a hard freaking call for a guy like me who grew up on 39th and Prospect in the 1970s and early 80s to say, I am going to go over there and make my way. Because it wasn't like you were welcome in all instances, right? So if you then stay over here and there is no economic opportunity, but what happens is we start having some big divides.
But, Mike, that's what you did.
Right, and I'm a special case.
Are you?
Yeah.
What's special about you?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know what
it is. I really don't
know
what
it
is.
You seem like a normal guy to me.
I grew up right where, like, I have lots of friends who did a lot of different things that I didn't do, and it's not because I'm better than them, and my God, I don't attribute any of it to,
because
my mother was white.
Something about your reality was just like, I can go over there.
Right.
And
I attribute it to some education, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you
know, even though the one thing I've always accepted as a good gift from my father, who I didn't see a lot, right, was that he required me to do some reading before I was even in school and before I was, you know, to do additional reading about African Americans who had done things. And then I remember very vividly at a very early age thinking, I will not be disallowed because of my race.
There you go. Empowerment.
But that doesn't happen.
We've got people patiently waiting. Do that.
And when people try to do it, they call him racist. They call the black guy a racist because he wants to teach the black guy to stand up and not accept.
Now, who calls
from
that
the white
racist?
Guy. White guys.
Really? Do white guys call that racist?
Yeah. What the hell do you think was the problem? You were talking about this about the ACE. Why was that a problem? Right?
ACE?
The African-centered education. Why was that controversial? Because they were talking about Africans.
What the hell does Thomas Jefferson fit into that?
That wasn't controversial because
it was controversial.
Why did you
put in waters.
ACE still exists.
Okay.
The controversy at ACE was funding.
Okay.
There were accusations of misappropriation of funds. Nobody is disputing. Nobody is saying that having an African-centered education.
I beg to differ. I listened to the public or the airwaves here in Kansas City, the talk radio, listening to the white guys talking about this, and that was a problem. That was a problem for them.
Well,
that's who makes these tapes that we're talking about, right? That's who has these conversations out of the earshots of people who make decisions. Am I going to hire these people? Am I going to do this? And if you are part of a circle that it kind of looks bad for you to have a bunch of black people with you, do you really think they're hiring a bunch of black people? I mean, sure, for their basketball team. But I'm just saying, because the people that he runs with are not all basketball leaders. I mean, they're
I guess
other
Blake
folks.
Griffith is pretty light-skinned. Is that what?
I don't even know who that is.
Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Brandis. I'm from Kansas City, but I live in California. And as far as Donald Sterling goes, he has a history of behaving badly. he was successfully sued for $2 million for refusing to rent to black and Mexican people. So this is more of a habitual thing that they're calling out for him. And, I mean, in a way, I think that most rich white men are bigots or racist. And elitist, really. And
well,
if you're not white, you're not
maybe.
Right.
Elitist, maybe. But basically, I mean, based upon what? Just a feeling?
Just a feeling. I mean,
well, a feeling and the fact that, you know, people like Donald Sterling get sued for, you know, refusing to rent to blacks and Mexicans. And then there's people who get sued and successfully for refusing to hire black
people.
Do you
know who he wanted?
And creating policies.
Do you know who Donald Sterling wanted to rent to?
Who?
Koreans.
Okay, so that makes him not racist.
I don't know what that means. I thought I'd just throw that in there, though. I mean, it's not like he just wanted it. I mean, because this guy.
I mean, if I want a poodle instead of a German Shepherd, I still want a dog, not a person.
See, but you can't operate like that.
No, you can't.
In America, where you're not supposed to operate like that. But
because
I mean, look at what Mitt Romney said when he thought he was amongst his own people. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's not very far-fetched for us to believe this. I don't think.
But I think that when we're really talking about being part of the power structure in America, now certainly it's been the power structure has been cornered by rich white men since the beginning. I mean, I'm not trying to dispute that. But really what we're talking about now is money. If you have money, you have access.
Absolutely.
And
but
that
it's
more so now than ever before. More so now than ever before. Right?
Right.
Okay, so we live in a situation where it used to be if you were black, get back. That's just the knee-jerk, that's the way it was 60 years ago. If you're black, get back. Get out of here. I don't want to see you. Go. Now, America is pay-to-play. It used to be you had to follow some other rules, too. But now it's just straight-up pay-to-play. If you got money, you could be a part of it.
Here's a problem, Ben. And I'm sorry, Brandis. You're not seeing that it didn't just get turned off. You don't see it because you're not in the room. I don't know. It's a black thing you wouldn't understand. I hate to fall back on that, but it's seeming like that's it. Like, you're not seeing it because it's not, like, you ask the question, you know, that's just a feeling, right? Well, hell yeah, it's just a feeling because we ain't in the room.
Right.
We cannot be in the room. Tell me the room that where we are.
I don't go there either. I'm not.
I understand that. You are with us.
You realize
correct.
I'm not
you are a part of this group, but we're talking about a subset of the 99% that is even further down the line because of systematic structures that were in place in this country, Jim Crow, slavery, whatever, restrictive lending policies. There's a whole host of affirmative actions that were taken to create a situation. And I know this isn't about affirmative action, but it is in a sense that it's not post-racial because the races still exist in our minds, whether it's just a you know, I don't know about the whole concept of. Go ahead.
And I think it is a lot of a class thing. I think that, you know, whether poor people or middle class people, of course, we're not going to get the same benefits as being rich or well to do. However, us amongst ourselves, the middle class, the lower class, the white people in the lower class, think we're a little bit better than them because, well, they're black. And being in California, I see it, and I see it with my own eyes. I see it. I work in a very diverse place, but I still see how it happens, and I see how people think and how people touch my hair. And it's like, oh, well, it doesn't feel like a black girl's hair. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I feel it every day, and it's not. And if these regular white people think that way, then what makes me think that these rich white people don't think that way? I'm not that naive, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm afraid, Ben, you're not seeing is that it does exist, and when it exists, focused on or against black people, it is still very harmful. It's not just a matter of like, well, it's pay to play. Yes, it's pay to play, but still layered on there. Maybe a thinner veneer of racism, but still there, very much still there, that you can be so pay to play and such a businessman that you still would not take your money. from blacks and Mexicans because you would rather.
And with Donald Sterling, he didn't even want his side chick to hang out with Magic Johnson or whoever it was she was hanging out with. He's rich. He has money to play. I mean, so why couldn't she be seen with him?
Yeah, but we're
just
talking.
Because he was black?
Yeah, right, but no, let's not confuse the way that our society has changed with this old crusty dude who is in the past.
Right.
That's my whole point. That's all I'm saying.
I get it.
Seriously, as a society, are things perfect? No, that's what this program's about. We talk about how things are not perfect across the board. I'm not trying to say that we figured out race, that we live in a post-racial society, because if anything, like a man like Wilt Chamberlain probably did more than anyone else could to try to get to a post-racial society. I mean 10,000, 15,000 ladies. I mean, that's how we're going to do it. We're going to just blend ourselves out.
He could not have limited himself to all black women in that scenario.
Exactly. You know, that's my point here, is that it's blending of things, and we're getting more blended, and that's the solution
right.
to it. I mean, that's how we're going to ultimately get post-racial, is when there aren't these extremely distinct races and differences anymore. I'm just saying that kids today are a lot better than kids were last generation and the generation before, and we're getting better and better and better. But when we sit here and we spent this last week, this Donald Sterling week, just racism, 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 racism. You know, and I really think white people, you know, as far are more comfortable with black people. And I don't know if black people are more comfortable with white people than they've ever been before. But I feel like because of cultural things, because of, you know, it's not like white people have spent the last 60 years copying black music and then calling it their own, and then it gets really popular. But now it's to the point where that doesn't have to happen anymore. I mean, people, white people and black people, are listening to the same music at the same time and going, we both think this is good. And that's just one thing.
Right.
But that's an important thing, because that's art. And art is the way that we understand life. And I mean, are we perfect? No, I'm not trying to say we're perfect. We're just getting better, man. And I don't want this one crusty old dude to be the difference between, you know, us progressing and regressing.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Uh-oh. Is she still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm here.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
Just one last thing. My mother's white. My father was black. And my grandfather wanted nothing to do with us.
Amen,
so I think he falls in line with the crusty old white guys that still have those feelings. I just, when it gets so close to home, it kind of makes me a little hot under the collar.
I'm with you, sister.
When time and time again, we really have to deal with this, because I think that stories like Donald Sterling really cause conversation. I don't think that denying it or pushing it under the rug or not talking about it is going to help. I think we all have to have an understanding of each other. And as long as we don't understand each other, then we can never work it out.
Right. And I'm not going to lay this at your feet, man, but the question of whether it's a progress or a regression comes to how we deal with it.
Sure.
And if I say to you that this stuff is still there and you go, nah, but it's not as bad as all that.
Right.
Then that kind of regresses it, because then I got to dig in and go, no, stop. Wake the hell up. Yes, it is just that bad. Because if I don't. Right. Because you say the blending. Right. Because the first thing that pops into my mind is, and now I'm going to sound like Russ a little bit, the blending thing is true. We will blend, but there's a lot fewer of the blacks than the whites, so they'll just blend out. So they're, you know what I mean? And they won't, but that's not just the solution, just waiting, waiting, waiting. I mean, you've got to actively point out the problems that exist, because that 81-year-old has kids and family and people that learn from him. So it's not, yes, he's going to go away, and they may be less racist or less racial. I don't even want to say racist, because I kind of get like our language is part of the problem here, because when we say racist, I think people think Klan and crosses and you must be subjugated more so than just like Brandis, like she said, that there's a certain segment, and has always been this way, that identifies with the racial component of white folks, that identify with the racial, because it gives them some elevation. At least I'm not that situation.
Oh, for sure. No, right. Yeah.
You know, I may be poor white trash, but at least it's white trash. You know what
at
I mean?
Least I'm not black.
And that is a reality that still exists.
But you got to realize at that point, I mean, you know, what is that something to be feared or concerned? I mean, because we're just dealing where we're scraping the bottom.
Right, but I'm just saying that what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said and what this whole week's conversation was about for me anyway was, yep, it's still there. So let's acknowledge that it's still there. We don't have to stop everything and go root out racism in the NBA. But let's acknowledge that there is racism in the NBA. Just because you got a bunch of black faces does not mean it's all better.
I mean, he could have said a lot of worse things, but, I mean, it's just indicative of the attitude of a lot of white people, and it's not just rich white people.
Right.
It's just he has a larger platform to stand on and say those things, and it's a lot more noise to it. But I guarantee you that there's many more like him.
Right.
And even to address his stuff.
Right.
I see it.
Absolutely. And even to address his stuff, because it's just more patronizing than whatever. It's a patronizing type of racism that he was talking about in this. But this is more of an economic thing, right? He bought a team for, what was it, $100 million or $12 million?
Yes,
and it is now worth $1 billion or whatever. It's like tenfold and more, worth more, right? But in his diatribe, he was saying, I feed them. I give them houses. I give them cars. I give them that. Okay, because this is more of a, like, how you view the economic product, right? He took something from $12 million to like worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And he says,
I fed them. They did that.
They built that. They played. They put the product on the floor. The labor, did it. He didn't do it. He sat back and gained because he had $100 million to buy the damn thing in the first place. So, and this isn't about race. This is the economics of it all. But the race part is just his patronizing notion that, of course I like blacks. I feed them. I give houses, cars. Yeah, he would have done it for white guys, too. And I'm sure he had a few white guys on his team. But you know what I'm saying? He was more focused. He was more focused on how he's given something when he just is a bystander and the money was being made. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he did some stupendous economic decisions that made his team better than others, but I think the NBA has grown because of maybe the post-racialness of our society.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I hear what you're saying, man. You know, are things perfect? No, they're not. They're not perfect, but they're getting a lot better. And
they
I think it's awfully unfair that this one crusty white dude, you know, whatever, we have to backpedal. We have to spend all this time having a very immature and very simple conversation about race in America, because things have gotten so much better. I mean, we don't live in the society that we lived in 60 years ago.
We don't live in the one we lived in 25 years ago.
We need to keep having conversations about this that are realistic and moving forward in it, and not having these hyperbolic conversations about race where they're going to force this guy to sell his team, whatever. He should be forced to sell his team because he was such a terrible owner for as long as
he
was.
So what do you think about that Clive Bundy dude? I mean, he's a nice, rich white guy.
Is he a rich white guy?
I don't know. He owes $1 million. I figure if you owe $1 million.
Sounds like you kind of, you know.
But I mean, he had a problem with the Negro. I mean, Negro. How do you say that word? I don't know, because he said it kind of. You know, you didn't hear about all that?
Well, of course I did.
Okay, yeah. I mean, but that's just another crusty old white guy who had no reason whatsoever to be bringing black people into the deal. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
had no reason whatsoever to bring that into the. No one was like, I guess maybe because Obama's black. I don't know what he brought that into the the debate for or the discussion.
That's it. But what he was talking about is a theme within the Tea Party
right.
mindset folks
right.
in regards to welfare.
And race.
And what he's saying about welfare.
And race. Say well, the okay, words with me.
I'm not trying to, I mean, you know.
I mean, but
that.
you do acknowledge that that is yet another example within the same time frame of the racial question.
That guy's a throwback. I mean, that dude's a throwback.
So we got
to
two throwbacks who made the headlines this week well, for right. different well, reasons.
No, for the same reason. For comments
well,
they
no,
made
he
about.
He made the headlines because of his whole not wanting to pay grazing fees.
Yeah, but the
headline, reason he was
the headline you're talking about is the statements he made about black people
okay,
and
yeah.
Mexicans.
Okay, right. But which, he interjected that for no reason whatsoever. Like, no one was like, in the context of grazing your cattle, how do you feel about the plight of the black man in America?
Well, he became a cause celeb for the Tea
right.
Party.
And
so
he said,
he
while
was,
I got your attention, let me get another one of our subplots out. I'm just saying.
I mean, welfare is not a good thing for poor people. It seems to keep poor people, if we're talking about
okay.
a problem with the black community in this town is economic opportunity, welfare, unfortunately, is not economic opportunity.
I would agree with you on that, and we could talk
and
about
that's,
that.
And that's welfare, that lack of, that economic stagnancy that welfare is bad for white people and
well, because
Mexicans
I would,
and whoever
right.
else,
and
too.
We've talked about this before, too, is the whole.
It keeps people on that generationally as opposed to, you know, and
there
it's
are
being
more
stuck.
Than just that too. I mean,
well,
I agree with you that
that's just
there.
One part of it. Let's go to the phones though.
Well, I whoops. Keep over talking these folks. I apologize, people. Maybe it's because I won't be here in the 4 o'clock hour, so I'm like, oh, I gotta get it out.
816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You know, I mean, but that guy Cliven Bundy. I mean, you know, he said things that are very hard for us to process because we have a hard. I mean. We have a hard time talking about race in this country.
Right.
And the words he was, I mean, so he said Negro,
right?
right? He said blacks. Or did
he
say,
didn't say blacks. He said
he
Negro.
Say, he said
had he just
people?
Said blacks and,
he
and
said
started
that
talking about that, I would still have the question, how
they,
did that get into the discussion?
He said that if the,
we
the
know what he said.
American Negro had learned how to pick cotton, he wouldn't be in the situation that
oh,
he was in.
Right,
that's not
right.
what he said.
He said, well, he didn't say that, but he said
something along those
lines.
That
at least when they were picking cotton, they had a job, or would it be better to not have a job or to be picking cotton?
So what were
some racist crap.
What
whatever he said.
But the issues that are happening in the inner city of America are happening because of deindustrialization. Because instead of, there is no economic opportunity and there's how then are people who are blue collar, low income supposed to create economic opportunity?
Right, because, and this will go to your blended comment earlier too, and it's almost metaphorical because it's not racial blending, but here's what happened. We've talked about this before, right? In the late 1960s when we started having integration more fully, and you can drive down Prospect now and still see some of the shells of businesses that used to be there, that when we had integration come along, people no longer went to Garrett's record store on 39th and Prospect. They now could go to the white record store over in, you know, Brookside. And that became a blending of our dollar, and so a lot of money left the black community and just got blended in to the mainstream, you know.
And, you know, and there's a lot of people that would argue that before desegregation, the black community's economy was much stronger.
That's what I'm saying, and it was totally weakened because we blended into the economy, and by blending into the economy, kind of got left as a much smaller piece.
816-931-5534, 931-KKFI.
Which is why black ladies hate me when they
on
see
the
a white girl on my arm.
Well, see, and that's that's exactly that type of hypocritical stuff that when people want to start pointing fingers at a guy like Don Sterling, it's okay. It's okay to blame him and say that he's the problem.
Right,
because
he's defending his billionaire.
No, because he's a billionaire.
Right, because he's defending from.
So then. If,
so I'm
so,
gonna be,
so then if a black woman looks at you, Mike, and goes, why has he got a white lady on his arm? He should be hanging out with a black girl and being proud of who he is and thinking all these judgments about you because you're with the white woman, you know.
It's unfortunate to say this, but she may have a point because
it's hypocrisy to go what Donald Sterling said was pretty tame as far as the things that you could say.
Right.
All right? That's my point.
Right.
What he said was pretty tame as far as the hateful things that you could say about somebody else.
Right, but what he
did was
keep out
politically
to the tune of $2 million blacks and Mexicans from his places.
All right. Well,
right. We see that there is more effect if a billionaire.
Can we go,
has
let's go to
that,
the phones. This guy's some. You're on the radio.
Yeah, this brother love, man. I think dude is a racist, and you know, sometimes I wonder about you if your insanity can be cured. You know, I think dude is just a blatant racist. You trying to downplay it. I mean, pissing our face and try to make us think it's raining. I mean, racism is a big problem in this country. I mean, and it's been a problem in this country. And I don't know why you're trying to downplay it so much. But then again,
okay, so it's a big problem. Racism is a big problem in America. Bunch of racist white people in America.
It's insecurity. Somebody took your girlfriend or something. I mean, you know, most white women call in and tell just how insecure you guys are when any black guys come around. They know. They know. Your women know you better than any damn body else. You know, and it's ironic, man, you know. You like Mexicans, man, just so damn insecure. So, sooner or later, man, you know, you got to face reality.
Is he talking about me?
Face reality, man. It's sickening, man. Okay. You know, it is, man.
Brother Love,
I always thought this about you, Ben.
Little monsters become big monsters, man. I don't think your insanity can be cured. I don't think you could ever be part of the tribe.
And then kind of figure which part he's talking about for
you
particularly.
Who are you talking about specifically?
Yeah, see, can I? Because he wouldn't tell us what he was talking about.
Can you gentlemen allow me? On the topic, but I wanted to get your opinion about this because you know Mary Fallon was in the news this week because of the botched election, but she was also in the news because her daughter caused
governor?
A scene last week, and she's the governor.
Okay, of Oklahoma, right?
Her daughter is in a band called Pink Pony.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
And her daughter posted some Instagram photos of her and her dog wearing an Indian headdress, and all hell broke loose, and it ended up with the governor making
an apology
at like the 6 o'clock news, and the drummer from the Oklahoma band, the Flaming Lips, got fired over the incident.
What?
And it blew up this week. It blew up, and
from the Flaming Lips.
Yeah.
Why? Did
the guy
he
that
say,
lives in Lawrence.
Did
and
he say something?
He went on, and he's half Native American himself. So, and Oklahoma is one of those towns where Native American pride is very real.
In
and
state?
She's kind of a blonde, trust fund, you know, Republican. I guess Republican art hipster is a thing in Oklahoma. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you guys, this whole thing blew up about the headdress. Once it turned into a thing, she, you know, this was a couple weeks before. Last weekend at the Norman Music Festival, she came out in full. They were all wearing headdresses, and there were all these native groups there that were protesting, and they started giving them the bird, and they put headdresses
on
their dogs. And the whole argument the whole week has been, and I don't want to stick up in any way for Mary Fallon's daughter or anything that would be offensive to the native peoples of this America. But the thing that's weird to me, and I don't know if you guys know any, sort of activist Native American types. They're very sensitive about things.
Right.
And the whole thing was that it's a big disrespect, right? And that it's disrespecting this sacred thing. It's not like a hat or whatever. But the thing that confuses me is that you can go to a place like Santa Fe, or you can go to any, you know, high-end Native American jewelry store, and if you have $2,000, a white man can walk in and buy a headdress as long as he's got the loot.
Made by actual Native Americans.
Yeah, there's one in Hannibal, Missouri that's awesome. If
But okay, can we go to the phones, or do you got a question, or what's up?
I have a question for you guys. Why are you? Are you okay?
We got somebody on the phone. We're having an issue.
I
want to
know,
the phone calls,
what do you guys think of the idea of protests over the mocking? They call it mocking, but apparently if you're not a Native American and you wear a headdress for any reason in public, you're disrespecting some kind of sacred, you know, something that will make them show up and, you know, with a group of 50 people and picket. And I'm just like, anybody who has 2,000, I'm not talking about some cereal box headdress. I'm talking about a real.
I don't think you're supposed to put a headdress on a dog, right? That's where it comes down to.
But if you sell it to somebody for $2,000, does it matter what? It's like, yeah, you can go into any Native store, spend $2,000, buy a headdress, and then if you wear it in the wrong way, you're spitting on their culture.
It's the daughter of the governor, right? That's the only reason anyone cares.
Right. And then you got to consider, like.
Let's go to the phones. 816-931-553-4931 KKFI. You're on the radio.
Hello?
Yeah. You're on the radio.
Hey, Doug.
What's up, Doug?
Doug, what's going, man?
Not much, man. Just out here working and listening to this conversation.
I know you're still around there.
You know, it's unfortunate that. All of this stuff had to come up because of Donald Sterling, you know, and what it did, I think it kind of woke people up, particularly black people. And what it did was it put white people in an uncomfortable position again of having to talk about race, you know, because as much as anybody, I think white people would like for this to be a post-racial society, you know, just so we won't have to talk about America's ugly history anymore. And the fact that the residue is still here with us. We're supposed to just act like this didn't happen. Let's move on. You know, all the things that you still, you know, all of the stuff that you still have to deal with because of racism, you know, because of slavery and different things like that. You know, let's act like that didn't happen and let's just move on. And that just, you know, people back to covers again.
So, absolutely. But I would like to put this out for all white people real quick. We don't claim Donald Sterling. He's actually Jewish.
That's all good. Here's the thing. To address this, because I think Doug hit the nail on the head. And again, I'm not picking on you, Ben. You're just the biggest white guy in the room. But I think that's it, man. It's like you don't want to. You want to say it's over, and I'm truly not accusing you of anything, and I don't think you're coming at it from any bad place other than let's move forward. Because, like, Jesse, well, here, let me do it this way. I'm sorry, Doug, help me out here.
Okay.
Because, Jesse, you said in your setup of that situation, you mentioned, you know.
Well, they threw the word racist around.
Well, hold on, because you brought up they're kind of sensitive about that in Oklahoma. Well, they're sensitive about it because, goddamn, they brought people from all over the friggin' country, the Trail of Tears, to put all these people here.
Oh, I understand
so now
that.
You, but
they didn't
I don't think you are
until they
understanding.
They Oklahoma either.
I don't think you understand that's somebody who, those people that are sensitive, as you say, have grandparents and grandparents and grandparents who are telling them how they got here, and they are looking at their condition and what they got to fight for. I mean, the last 100 years with the oil booms, the amount of Indians that were ripped off and dealt with harshly, that's where you come from, right? That's the nest that you were raised in, and then you come up. And then you got the governor of the state's daughter putting the headdress on a bulldog. I'm assuming it's a bulldog.
It's funny that you knew that.
Well, because it would be really weird to be a poodle.
But anyway. I didn't want to make it complicated. I understand the plight of the Native Americans. What I'm saying is that if they're so damn sacred,
then why do you sell them to
any white dude who has $2,000?
That's so, you know.
People
that,
wear headdresses.
We're getting all confused. So somebody's making headdresses.
We need to quit looking for reasons to throw it back in the face of the people who are offended by it.
Right.
Because
the word
racism
got thrown around.
See, that's easy to say. Okay, I can buy that for $2,000. Okay, that still doesn't give you a right to disrespect it, especially when
it's
you
your
are
property.
The offender.
You bought it for $2,000.
Or descended, or you're descended from the offender.
Yeah, but having a receipt for having bought it isn't going to prevent somebody who's Indian, American Indian, for being offended if they see it misappropriately.
Right, just because you bought NWA does not mean you
can
call me the N-word.
You're right.
Thanks a lot, buddy, but you can't do it.
That's not even the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
You're selling somebody something that's so sacred.
The whole thing, man, when you look at it, like Michael T., you made a statement that I think you're very misinformed on. You were talking about Donald Sterling saying that he put clothes on these people's backs. He drives them cars. He buys. He gives them homes to live in.
No, he didn't say he bought it for him.
See, that's not economic. That's not economic. That's a modern day slave master telling you what he does for these people that he takes care of.
Right.
You know, and that's what he did. That's what he was saying. And the reason this was handled so quickly, and the reason the owners jumped all over you, the first owner that you heard from was Michael Jordan, right? Now all the rest of these owners are white men. They were super silent. And you know why? Because they like the word owner. And number two, they all have mistresses. And number three, they don't. These people have been in a good old boys club with this guy since 1981. You think they didn't know how he felt?
Right.
In those private conversations? Because first off, no black men were privy to those conversations because there were no black owners. So we're talking about since 1981, they've been aware of who this guy was for all that time. And some of those people who own these teams have been there almost as long. He's the longest tenured guy in the league, you know, as far as owners go. But some of these people have been around him for 20 years and know who he is and how he is. And the thing is, it comes down, like you talk about Magic Johnson and money gives you access. No, all of the thing that Magic Johnson proved as far as Donald Sterling went was exactly what Malcolm X said. He said, what do you call a black man who's a doctor? And he said it. He said, you call him a nigger. That's what you call it. And it goes back to what my father used to say. When does a black man become a nigger? As soon as he leaves the room. And that's what it boils down to. Economic status doesn't buy you anything if you're a black man in this country.
And that may
because
be changing.
Like you were talking about, you're still the lowest on the totem pole. I'm around people sometimes who I know who feel like, you know, I might not be much, but I'm not you. You know, and it makes me laugh because I'm like, dude, you wish you were me. You're trying to convince yourself that you're not me and you're okay with it, but you wish you were me. I'll go ahead and listen off of it, man. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right. Thank you, Doug.
It is nice to hear from Doug. It's been a very long
time.
It's
been too long, sir. Call back. Not right now, but, you know.
Okay. So, what's the flip side of this? You know, we sit here and go, well, we have to commiserate on the past. We have to focus on the past. We can't look at the future. We have to get stuck on this. I mean, we can either go, we're going to move forward. I mean, the history of
America. I'm ready to move forward.
I am also ready to move forward. The history of America is what it is. The genocide of America is started with the American Indian, you know? The forced human slavery of black people in this country, ethically, morally wrong. That happened, you know? The situation is what it is today. Moving forward, looking at today, how are we going to... I mean, it's just... We can sit here and go, the past was messed up. Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. You can't argue with that. But how is that going to be the obstacle to everything in the future? I mean,
It wasn't an obstacle to the future till the dude came out on tape saying what he said. Wasn't nobody like running around, let's protest the NBA because we've been examining their statistics and we see that there's so many white owners and not very many black owners, so let's protest until there's 10% black ownership in the NBA. No, nobody's doing that. This came out for whatever reason. Don't be mad because it came out. It exists. It just is there. It's a zit. Let's pop it and move on. Or we can sit there and go, no, don't pop that zip because.
But nothing nothing.
It came out because
nothing
got that girl angry.
Right. Nothing is being accomplished and nothing as productive is taking place here at all. Now, if the end result is that a black person or black people or black and white people end up buying the Clippers, is that good? Is that a good thing? Is another black owner in the NBA a good thing?
Or they move him to the Sprint Center?
I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter. If Oprah Winfrey and Magic Johnson buy this team, that does nothing for me. That does nothing for black people. It does nothing other than there'll be some more black people in the room when they're making that decision and having those discussions and talking about whatever they're talking about.
But isn't that what we're about. Talking about? But isn't that... We just said the problem was that the black there aren't black people in the room.
It's not to me personally, to my children's children, okay. Right? As we move forward, how do we move forward? We're at a place right now where this thing just came out.
These people are going to die. All these people that are his age,
right? But they're going to
they're
continue
gonna take
to
that
teach
with them.
Their children. They've been teaching their children for years and years, and we're teaching them now, right? Right this very minute, there are white people listening to this. Maybe even you who are going, well, I disagree
maybe
with you,
me.
But I'm talking to the audience in general.
Sorry.
Right, just like, or you, Ben, or you, Jesse, or you,
white person
listening to
anonymous
me.
White Whitey. Guy out there.
There are people listening, going, you know what? That's a bunch of nonsense. And then they'll sit and they'll stop and they'll think about it for a little while, and then that will come. Because while you readily admit that the Trail of Tears had an effect and this happened, there are a lot of people who don't think that it happened that way. They feel like, hey, we gave you a friggin' job. We took you out of the jungle and we brought you over here and put you, made industrious people out of you. And if you think I'm off on that, you got your guy here that we're talking about. You got your Ted, or not Ted, Cliven Bundy that we were talking about. There was an Arizona guy running for Congress who were talking about the exact same thing, right? This is not some isolated thing. I just don't come in here and make race the issue every single week. There are many who think that I make it too much of a racial issue, and I didn't bring this one up, but having said that, that's where I come
down. I don't want to insult
exists.
Anybody, but like 40 years ago, 50 years ago in this country, like the people who lived in Appalachia who were raised by their Bougan parents
right.
that taught them how to be racist. Those I really do believe, like, those people that were raised in shacks, like coal miner's daughter style, mm-hmm. those people had pea brains. They really were stupid. I mean, you could teach your kids now, what are you saying, like, teach them racism, but anybody who's a thinking, you know, it's like when I saw this whole thing with this guy and what he said, and more so the Clive Bundy thing, my first instinct was like, God, who walks on this planet with me that feels like it's totally cool to say this in front of TV cameras, even if you think it. Even if you
it
think
exists,
it.
Right. It exists. And
holy
and since
hell.
Since we're running out of time, I want to throw this. It's probably irresponsible because, but hell, now we're doing this whole race thing. I was thinking about this Ukrainian thing and what they're doing over there, which, you know, if you look back at the history, you can see all this intermingling between the Ukrainians and the Russians for a long, long, long time, like way before the Soviet Empire and all that jazz. But what you have happening right now is a big Russia sitting there right next to a Ukraine with a Russian minority and saying, like, do what you want to do because we got your back. You know what I'm saying? That's why you got Russians in power, even though they are sending troops over, I'm sure, to help out, advisors, as we say. But there are
pillows.
Russians. There are Russians that are, or Russian, whatever, ethnic Russians that are rising up because of that.
Hushkies.
What would happen? This is purely an intellectual exercise. Mm. But what would happen if there was a black powerful state on the borders of America that was like appealing to black people in this country who have been overlooked, unheard, when we try to say, hey, this is racist, where our feelings are offended, and you go, shut the hell up, racism's over. I'm not saying that's what you're saying exactly, but you know what I mean? If you had that type of dynamic, it would be very interesting to me because I think you might find a fair amount of black people, even today in 2014, making their way to congregate and be disruptive. You know what I'm saying? Because ancestral wrongs or ancestral feelings are strong. You know, I grew up, I haven't lived east of Troost in 30 years. But I still feel very much the dividing line that is truce that still exists in this city. It just does.
Racism is alive and well, and it lives in most police departments, right? I mean,
and there are a lot of blacks enforcing it. And there are black racists, sure. But when it comes down to the power dynamic, I mean, I didn't bring this up, and I'm sorry, but I just felt like, I don't know. So what do you think about the Royals?
It's probably about as fruitful as any thoughts discussion you might have on the owner of the Clippers. The Royals
smallest
baseball season.
Second smallest fan base in all of NBL. Did you see?
Baseball,
or
really?
MLB, sorry. Did you really see that? Yeah, they did this. The New York Times actually did the study based on all kinds of different things, seeing what teams, and of course the
jerseys,
most popular teams were
New York,
the Yankees,
Red Sox,
the Cubs, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Cardinals, the Pirates. It was all the original teams, even the Reds. But the only team that has a smaller fan base in Major League Baseball than Kansas City Royals,
Toronto
which
Blue Jays,
blew my mind. You never believe it. The Oakland Athletics.
Really?
They must not like baseball out there.
Maybe they still got the stink of KC on them.
But yeah, they had
it. They came from Kansas City.
They had it on a map, and it looked like it looked like the map of any election. You know how you look at a map the day after election, it's like, oh my God, Romney won. Because every state's red, right? And
right.
And then there's like three blue states, and then that guy won.
Right.
And that's what it looks like when you look at this map, because they had two different kinds of maps, but the one map had the actual, each team's region was colored in. So when you look at the map without any information, it looks like on paper that the Texas Rangers and the Kansas City Royals are the two most popular teams in all of baseball because of the...
Oh, okay,
the
right.
Aerial, the aerial radius
Nebraska,
of their fan base, how far
Royals
it stretches.
Network,
yeah, there's
right.
Royal fans. The Royal fan base stretches up to like the Dakotas somehow.
That makes sense because Chicago is really all you
when,
can.
But
well,
it's
Minnesota
the second smallest
team.
Fan base in baseball.
And the Twins are an expansion team, just like the Royals are an expansion team. So,
and it was based on. It was based on
that's
how many times each team had been Googled
original,
and sales.
When the original Royal Stadium was built, it had AstroTurf instead of real grass because Ewing Kauffman didn't want people traveling hundreds and hundreds of miles to come see a game that could be rained out because there was too much water on the outfield.
Ah.
I mean, that's how I read that.
Right. That because makes sense.
Was it where the new one is? I mean, was it where
the
current
new
one is?
The Kauffman Stadium, yeah.
Royal Stadium was called Royal Stadium until the owner died, and then they called it Kauffman Stadium after the owner.
So it's always been the same stadium.
Yeah, it's been there.
They played the first couple seasons at Old Municipal Stadium, which is behind Lincoln.
Did the Royals play down there?
At Municipal Stadium,
I knew the Chiefs
that
played down there in the 80s.
No, that's right, yeah. Until, because Kauffman was built in 73, or completed in 73, and the Royals started in 69. So, back when, you know, white people had to go to the ghetto for something.
Back when it wasn't the ghetto.
No, I'm pretty sure 23rd in Brooklyn
was always the
ghetto.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was literally, that part of town was truly a ghetto. I mean, that was the, I mean, back when black people could only live in a certain part
of a city.
That was, you know, from 27th Street to 12th Street, from Paseo to Prospect. That was where black
people
could live.
Why did the baseball stadium and football stadium get put there? I mean, probably because it was where cheap land was.
I'm not sure why that is.
Probably is had, that was probably the case.
Mama's family.
Buy a bunch of land.
I'm not sure why that is the case.
Or maybe some rich old dude came in and said,
I've been providing you food and houses long enough. Get out of here. I'm going to provide for some football
yeah,
players.
Yeah, why Kauffman Stadium is not where, what is it, Kemper Arena?
Yeah, down in the bottoms, yeah, right.
That should be where Kauffman is.
Yeah, if
you
everything
see,
was
every
down there,
in
Kauffman,
you
cool.
should be able to see the skyline of KC.
That would be sweet. Instead of seeing the camera on top of the FCA. Is that what it is? A Fellowship of Christian Athletes? Across the highway, you can...
Yeah.
That was where I noticed my first camera. They have like a big camera up on there that's aimed at the highway, which I always thought was kind
of
weird.
It's
but
like
it might
one
be
of those
aimed
you,
at the Royals Stadium.
It's like one of those things when you turn
so
on...
they can tape games.
Good morning. you turn on like, I don't know what it would call it, Wake Up Kansas City, whatever
right.
the early morning show is, and they're like, Now we'll go to our live traffic cam. Looks like things are pretty clear on 670.
Yeah, the Channel 5 Skyview or whatever.
Stay away from 435 South. It's a mess.
And you know, you can do that yourself now, too. I mean, you've been able to do it for like five or six years. Right. Yeah, you can get on there and see.
Probably longer than that.
Yeah.
Do you know, Michael T., where, if you might not even know, but where can you go online and get real-time, I guess it would be like a scan. Like if you had a police scanner in your house, like my grandma likes to sit around and listen to whatever the cops and firemen are doing in town. But when you see six cop cars race past your house and you have a...
He lives in Roland Park.
Right.
Never see six cop cars race past his house.
Right.
I'm not saying you personally, but one, I'm saying one sees six cop cars and then there's a helicopter circling overhead and you're like, geez, I wonder what is going on.
And then you never hear about it.
Is there somewhere that you can get on and look?
Yeah, I think like I use when I'm listening to KKFI.
Not after, not like where you look at last night's activity.
On my phone,
like in real time.
I use an app called TuneIn Radio, and one of the choices on there is to look for the scanners of the different cities. So Kansas City may be on there. Actually, I know they are because I remember when I first found out about that, I was listening. It was kind of weird because I was listening to the dispatch, and I don't know if there's different ones. I think it's all the same, right? But the people were talking about up north, like in the North Charlotte, North Troost area. And it's kind of weird because you hear the cops talking and they're like, there's a disturbance at this address. And then some guy pipes in and he goes, oh, yeah, I was there last weekend. That guy, you know, and it's kind of weird just hearing them talk about what's going on. And it was real time, or it seemed to be. So that's a spot you might check out. I'm sure somebody might have some other scanner options. How do you scan the police, man? Just follow them?
He asks his friends that are cops, give me the lowdown.
I don't worry about the police. They're all white and they treat me politely.
I was at the light up here at 39th and Broadway at like 3 in the morning a while back. And I was waiting for the light to turn green. And on the other side of the street was a Kansas City Navy blue cop car with two police officers in there, waiting for the light to turn green, coming the opposite way towards me. And a green hatchback of some kind of goes to turn on the 39th, and it was these two hipster-looking, you know, fuzzy white dudes that looked like they had a couple drinks that night. They turned too early somehow, and they turned right into, like, a pitch machine and knocked it over. And I immediately look over at the cop like, oh, geez.
You gotta
and the
get
cops
that,
are in
right?
the car laughing.
And they didn't do anything about it.
They didn't pull him over.
All I'm saying is.
And I just thought, jeez. I know a guy that got arrested in Texas for not using a turn signal at a stop sign. In
arrested?
Kansas City at 3 in the morning, you can get laughed at by a police
right.
officer for driving into a pitch dispenser and knocking it over. Accidentally. Sorry. I'm going home.
The police reactions are something else. I had a friend that talked to this week that somebody had called and said, this is weird because there was nothing to it. Somebody had called and said, at this address, or at least they said, there were eight cops at his door saying there was a call that there's a woman that was beat up and being held hostage here.
We have to shoot your dog, sir.
Well, he was...
That's like a new thing that the kids are doing. The kids that play, like, you know, Call of Duty and stuff.
That's,
they SWAT.
So you heard the SWATed thing,
so they,
too?
So they do this thing where they start putting calls into local, you know, jurisdictions and saying, yeah, there's a kidnap victim where I'm in, or, like, I just killed a bunch of people in this house and I'm going to kill my mama, too. And
yeah, that then, was the case that I
so
heard
then,
about.
Like,
yeah,
all of
we
a sudden
used to just order pizzas for our neighbors.
So then
know?
The SWAT team shows up with, like, 30 people.
Right.
And it's like a prank thing.
And well, and in wow. the story, the rest
that
of the story,
takes nuts to do that.
That's
dude,
better than swapping license plates.
The dude
that's
who
more
was
than
playing the game that they were swatting, doing this to, he didn't even know what was going on because he had his headphones on and still playing the damn game. And they had said that he had killed his mother and family, and all these police were around with bullhorns, like, come out, and the mother and brother come out and go like, "What the hell are you talking about? We're okay."
What's that right. stank cool. German
it's,
cheese?
I don't know. It's 3 o'clock or just about, and it's time. It's time to do the suicide. Buckle up, folks. 311 coming your way right after these messages.
Oh,
here.
You're not going
to
play 311.
Be quiet. Be quiet. Be quiet. right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This week, World War I as a religious crusade. We take a look at the Great War through a new lens, 100 years.